coming into. I should probably do it like a little intro. It's like, aloha.
Take one.
Take one. Action. Whew, in the sun. How's it going, bud?
I'm good. How you doing? You all right? Yeah. Too much sun?
Sun's good.
It's been a warm French, like late season, late warmth.
It's been literally summer for the last 6 months, yeah. I feel like, which is epic. I'm not complaining because last year it was a pretty rough winter.
Yeah.
You know?
Was it?
Yeah.
But I heard that because it's really warm,
yeah,
up until, you know, we're late October now.
Right.
Then it's going to be a really stormy winter again.
So I heard that too, but I'm just, I choose to ignore all of this and just pretend,
yeah,
you know, this is going to be until, this is the weather until February, March, April, and it goes straight into summer again. It's like the endless summer kind of thing, you know?
But it's good for Morocco, no? If it gets big and stormy.
Yeah. So a little bit of backstory on this whole thing.
Yeah.
You and I were supposed to go to Morocco together. You abandoned me, so I'm going early. I'm going tomorrow. Oh, no, the day after tomorrow. But the reason why we're here anyway is to chat about your Maldives trip. Because I remember the last time we talked, you were just about to go. Actually, the last time we talked, just for the purpose of this show, let's just pretend you called me hysterically because your flight got canceled.
Oh, no, and, it did too. It was so stressful.
I want you to give us a little rundown. Like, who do you want to blame in this whole chain of events?
I wish I could blame someone, but it was actually because there were strikes in Charles de Gaulle, Paris Airport. And who was I flying with? I think it was Emirates. They were going to get me go from Bordeaux to Paris to Abu Dhabi to the Maldives.
Right.
And of course that happened, and then they just delayed me 24 hours.
Right.
And it was kind of like, that's the solution. I was like, no, hang on, I'm rocking up on the day of the retreat starts. I can't get there 24 hours late. My clients are very nice and my students are very nice, but I don't know if they're that understanding to miss the coach.
Yeah, basically, like, they're paying for 6 days, but they're only going to get five, right? Yeah,
so. Yeah. So that wasn't acceptable. And it was this huge, like, 2 days of trying to be on the phone. I had terrible signal because over here at Senos, where I was staying, with the worst. It was like being in outback Australia. So I had terrible signal. I was on the phone to them and I had to get them to reroute me with another airline, which obviously, you know, is very hard because I don't want to give the money away.
Absolutely.
So they had to reroute me through Barcelona for a night, and they didn't want to shuttle me back and forth from the airport because I had a surfboard, because everybody hates surfboards here in Europe,
which is weird. Never travel on the train in Europe because A, they don't let you most of the time, B, it's just a hassle, like, don't do it.
Just traveling with surfboards in general just sucks. And that's why I've had so many people message me, like, hey, you should come here. And I'm look, if I'm in one place, I want to go to a place and be there for 4 weeks minimum, because I hate packing up boards, getting to the airport. I just can't do it anymore. I'm too old.
Exactly. Honestly, it's like, I feel exactly the same way. I want to do like staycations, you know. I don't want to I'm done with like packing up every second day and like go somewhere else.
And with boards?
Oh.
It's like backpacking and is stressful enough. And now you're
and a partner. It's just, it's
too much.
Done.
Yeah. Mm. So anyway, it was a stressful experience, but I got there on time.
Right.
And we arrived and it pumped for 11 days straight.
I saw. Yeah. I heard and I saw. And meanwhile, I was here and it was like flat and windy. I was like, nice. Good stuff.
It was perfect timing. It was just incredible. I couldn't believe the waves that we got. Mm.
So just a little backstory as well, because we kind of rumbled on about nothing and everything. But this is like the aftermath of the first episode we did, which was the taking your surface roadmap internationally.
Yes.
So just tell us a little bit about where you went, why you did it, like what was the idea behind going, you know, from a wave pool kind of like controlled setting to a open ocean playground.
Yeah, I mean, look, that's the end goal for everyone who comes to the wave pool.
So
it was the natural progression to go, hey, okay, for people who have done the wave pool or people overseas who haven't been able to come and train with me, let's do an ocean experience, because that's, again, that's the end point that we're all shooting towards. So it was really cool to get people to step out of their comfort zone and get into that ocean for us as well, like from a coaching and filming perspective. There's so many more variables. It's so much more difficult. You know, it's getting standardized clips, for instance.
Yeah.
And waves are different. The boat rocking was a surprise hurdle. Like
for the cameraman? Or?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, right.
For Santi, my camera guy, he's, you know, on the boat, and he during the clips, it's like it's moving, you know, which is a super hard thing to navigate. So he did a really good job there. And the big... benefit though, and I think the biggest part of it then why I think ocean retreats are always going to be a success, provided there are waves, is there's just so much more power.
And
going to the Maldives was, the thinking was, hey, we'll go and we'll get some intermediate level waves, which everyone can, you know, find really easy to progress on and get into. We rocked up and it was 4 to 6 foot every day, you know, so it was pretty solid, but I had such a good group. They were so strong and brave, and they were taking some really big steps, so that was really good. And we had, you know, we had a late addition as well, who was probably more on the beginner side.
Right.
So I had a chat with her on the phone, and it was kind of like, you know, based on her description, it was like, yeah, you're probably going to be fine. But then we got that big swell.
Yeah.
You know, so it was a bit tricky. So we ended up adding in a surf session, like at a more beginner-friendly spot on a lot of days.
Okay.
So that ended up being a little bit tricky, like instead of two sessions, morning and arvo, with an analysis in between, it was like...
So for the whole group or only for her?
Only for her.
Yeah, right.
And me, and sometimes the camera guy. So like fitting, that was basically fitting in another 2 or 3 hours work in the day. So that was a little bit tricky to navigate at times, but the end result is everybody got waves, everybody got stuff. Everybody progressed, which was really exciting. Some huge steps forward, which is really cool. We've got the video stuff on that, hopefully coming soon. I don't know if we'll release it publicly or just via Patreon, but it was really cool. It was such a good trip. And IATA, the resort, was, I'll tell you what, let's talk about paradise. Sheesh, I've never stayed in such a baller resort before.
It's pretty nice.
You've been there.
Yeah, I've been there twice or three times, and it's like, you know, like, obviously, in the Maldives, like, what you get is luxury retreats, right?
Mm.
But I think from every single one I stayed at, I think IATA was or is my favorite, just because it's a very nice resort, A, obviously, right? It's paradise, but at the same time, the vibe is really good.
Yeah.
It's a really nice, chill resort, and honestly, like I said before, right, I was here... Well, here is, he's in France, living here temporarily now.
Kind of.
And I'm just across the border in Spain. And I was here and it was windy and, you know, it wasn't very nice. Waves were kind of okay, but, you know, not Maldives standards or like the standard you guys had in that week. And I was, I was jealous, to say the least, jealous, just a slight bit. But actually, I want to talk about the progression, right?
Yeah.
So because you've done, I don't know how many retreats you did at the wave pools, right? But if you look back in hindsight, like, did you think it was more difficult to actually take a group of intermediate to the ocean? Or do you think actually that is what you want to do moving forward? Or a little bit of both?
I think it'll always be a bit of both. The wave pool from a strict formatted if A then B, you know, if B then C sort of format of coaching is the premium setting.
Yeah.
That being said, if the waves pump, and they did, and we've only got our group out in the water, which it happened quite a lot, then that's extremely hard to beat as well. But that's going to be potentially, depending on where we go, how we coordinate this. You know, look at the World Surf League. Look at when they rock up at events. Look at the last 2 years of events. They've been pretty garbage.
Yeah, it wasn't really a dream tour.
No,
at
and they've
all, right?
got every resource in terms of surfing at their fingertips.
Yeah.
They time it perfectly on paper and they still can't get perfect waves. So for us to achieve that all the time is going to be a bit of a stretch. But that is going to be, that is my preference. Perfect waves, you know, only my group out. That would be ideal. But it is going to be the exception. So I think the wave pool for consistency, for reliability, is going to be the future. And I'm having some good, exciting conversations there about where that's going and how we're going to set up something. And, you know, that's obviously my goal, is to have a surfers roadmap dedicated facility for coaching. And whether we partner up with someone or do our own, I'm not sure yet. But there's certainly some exciting conversations happening there, which, yeah, it's cool.
And again, like touching on the progression, right? If you look at the progression within that week, right? Mm. Like what were some of the main takeaways that you maybe, you know, like, I'm sure you, like, you got there, you started planning things in your head, how it would look, but were there some things in terms of progression of, you know, people there, people part of the, that were part of the of the retreat that you were like blown away by?
Yeah I mean, there was so we had one everyone's working on different stuff,
which is
always the case, but a lot of it was to do with positioning and wave selection, you know. And that's one of the advantages of me being out in the water, in addition to me getting to surf, is I'm sort of acting as a bit of an anchor as to where potentially you could argue the optimal takeoff zone is.
Yeah.
So that's good. So I had a lot of the guys sort of using me as a reference point coming over. You know, there are a couple of surfers who every now and then I might need to like physically give a little push into the waves, again, because it was quite solid, just to get them ahead of the wave. Because, you know, if you can't paddle to match a 4 to 5 foot wave, and still just the courage to go on those big ones was really cool to see, actually. So that was one thing, was positioning. And I think a lot of people have this habit of seeing a wave, and you see it out here all the time, seeing a wave, turning around, and just paddling.
Just paddle.
Yeah.
And then, like, paddle for the wave where it actually breaks.
They're blind. They're blind to what the wave is doing. So one of the big focus points in terms of positioning was face the wave as long as possible, and if possible, paddle to the peak to adjust your position, right? So sit somewhere where you're actually going to adjust by facing the wave, as opposed to sitting out too far and then having to adjust by paddling in, which obviously leads to all sorts of issues. So that was really big. There was one particular surfer who had a moment, if you will, out in the water where I translated that, and I must have said it in a certain way that finally clicked for the surfer. And it was like, bang, like immediately 50% increase wave count, like just like that.
Right.
And good waves, not just catching waves, like actually picking good ones and putting himself in the right spots. That was really cool. From a on wave point of view, a lot of it was that fundamental stuff that we're always working on. We had one guy who was, you know, quite high intermediate, advanced, who was working on just selection of maneuvers. And again, because it's the ocean, you're dealing with a moving canvas that's inconsistent.
Yeah.
So, you know, he'd go up and try and do a re-entry on what was really a top turn section. Because in his mind, he's gone, I really want to work on that re-entry that we analyzed yesterday.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's just about,
like, stuck in his head. That re-entry, that's what I want to do, kind of thing, right?
So it's getting him to start to really, and I can't say it in a way that emphasizes how important it is, but to really look at the wave whilst you're riding it, specifically the lip of the wave. And hey, if there's coping and it's, you know, steep, then chances are you can go for a more vertical turn.
Yep.
If there is that gradient, that strong gradient into a fatter shoulder, then, you know, that's your time to cut back to the pocket.
Yeah.
So just those basic things, and then getting more specific with arm positioning and rotation and eye line and all that sort of stuff throughout the week. That's really what we worked on. And some of the guys, everyone had some really good improvements. We had people literally doing their first maneuvers ever through the week, and going from, I'm talking going from zero to like Mach 10, you know, like doing really nice turns as the first turn ever. I'm just going, what has happened? And they've just been soaking up the analysis from everyone else
and
then just performing that. And I just go, where did that come from? And so we start working on that, you know. So that was really cool. there's different stories across the board, but everyone took big steps forward. It was really cool.
Do you also think, like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but when you go to wave pools, right, usually what is it, like a 1 day, 2 day, kind of retreat, right? Yeah. So 24 hours kind of thing, or two sessions?
Although I have a few people who come and do 3 a week if right. I'm down there.
Okay.
Wow. Yeah.
Hook me up with those people. I'm gonna go
too. No, but what I'm trying to ask is, like, if you look at somebody who comes for the day, yeah. right? And of course it is a more controlled setting. It is probably easier to practice in the wave pool. Mm-hmm. But then I think if you add time to it, I think you're in the long run, your progression becomes much like the progression curve is much steeper, right? Because you have way more time to emphasize what you've done wrong or done before and kind of use that and practice it, right? Because you have essentially the retreat was 7 days, two surf sessions a day, right?
Yeah.
And in
long,
the middle,
some long surf sessions.
Right. And then in the middle you had a like video session, mm-hmm. right? So what do you think in terms of if somebody goes like, all right, I have a week or I have some time, right? Do I want to go to a pool? Or do I want to go and spend 7 day at a prime location somewhere, right? Yeah. And kind of progress that way. Like, who is it for? Who isn't it for?
I think it's both. I think there's going to be a pathway within the Surfers Roadmap, and it's watching tutorials on YouTube. It's doing the online courses. It's coming to a wave pool retreat, and then the ocean retreat, I think, is the end. Of the pathway.
Yeah,
and,
right.
And to be honest, I think a lot of people will just rotate between the wave pool and the ocean experiences. And again, it's hard to say that there would be a premier sort of format, because the ocean one is always contextual.
Is there,
how many people, how good the waves are.
Is there a scenario that you could envision where you might have both? Where you have one retreat and you kind of combine, it's like a combo retreat, right?
Yeah, that would be ideal. It would be so, so good. And that's hopefully what we can achieve with the Surfers Roadmap location when it comes, is to have it be near high quality surf so that you can do 2 days in the wave pool and then 2 days in the ocean or whatever. Morning in the wave pool, afternoon in the ocean, that sort of format where you can mix it up. Maybe you could just change it based on the conditions. So that would be really cool, because then you get the benefits of both. Because one thing that the wave pools, the ones that I've surfed anyway, can't really match is the raw power of the ocean and a long wall. What, as you would know, what a big, long, clean wall does to your surfing, a wave pool can't really do.
Also, like the time, because, you know, when I surfed the wave pool, I was actually, I was surprised because, you know, you look down the line, but there isn't really a down the line kind of thing, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, and I think that if you translate that to the ocean, all of a sudden that wall is extended and you have so much time, and sometimes you don't know what to do with that time, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that is, I think that's the main difference when you compare the two, at least for me.
Yeah, I think so. And then, you know, you could talk about that digestion time of the info that you talked about, that total immersion aspect. The wave pool is 1 day, and a lot of people, I think, might feel overwhelmed trying to digest all that. So you spread that out, and often the things that we're working on the first day, in a lot of circumstances, we're working on day 3 and 4 still. You know, we're just tweaking here and there.
So
to have 3 or 4 days to work on one skill is a bit of a luxury. That in the wave pool, we work on that skill and there is often a big improvement, but sometimes I can see the surfer doesn't know if they've ticked the box. They don't know if they've moved in the right direction until they receive the post analysis, you know? So, and then again, that's a week later. So there could be that loss of kinesthetic awareness that takes place. So there's arguments, there's pros and cons of each one.
How many people that were in the Maldives with you were in one of your retreats at wave pools prior?
Yeah, I had one on the Ayata experience who had been in the wave pool before, and then I had 3 in the follow-up event that I did.
And what was their main takeaway, like if they compared the two?
All of them, actually, funnily enough, said, man, I need to surf the ocean more. because they're, you know, they're busy guys.
Yeah.
They're workers, right? They're business people. So they're surfing in the wave pool, you know, maybe two or three times a week.
Yeah, we're outside, so this happens. Cars, well, people.
Welcome to Germany.
Bikes.
Okay,
there we go.
So they're workers, so they're busy, right? And so they might surf in the wave pool three times a week, you know, for an hour after work.
Yeah.
Because they don't have time to go to the ocean.
Right.
So those people, I could, the positioning was a big thing immediately. And the ocean awareness, you know, because in their own words, they'd gotten a little bit lazy. And hadn't been spending a lot of time in the ocean, and it's those tiny things. I mean, again, it's the wave pool is the funnel to the ocean.
Yeah.
They came away going, man, this is just the best. I need to spend more time in the ocean, you know, which is great. You want everybody to get to that point because...
I mean, ultimately, that's like, you know, at least for me, a wave pool can only take you so far,
yes.
right?
Yeah,
like if you really want to experience what it's like, you know, to take off on a set wave and surf good waves, I think nothing really replaces the ocean and that stoke, you know, because you're stoked, right? If you take off on a good wave in the ocean and it's
and whatever that you wave do, came right? To you.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, whatever you do, it does not matter. Like even if you bog the freaking takeoff and you know you go over the falls, fuck it, kind of thing, right? Like, But the thing is, you're outside, and I think that, because essentially it's like divine and conquer, right? Like in the wave pool, there's not a lot of divine and conquer. It's in the ocean there is. I mean, there's people you have to take into consideration. There is obviously different waves, different setups, you know, different conditions as well, right? So I think that ultimate stoke, you only get it from the ocean.
Yeah, yeah. I haven't had the same satisfaction that I get on a wave from the wave pool. There's been a few, like, there's a couple of settings that I'll surf where you sort of bang together a couple of nice turns and you're like, oh, that felt nice.
Yeah.
But doing that on repeat in the Maldives is far, far more rich and satisfying experience.
So,
for everybody, I think.
The last question really, or what's left is like, when are we going to do it again?
Yeah. Bonjour, ça va?
Bonjour.
French lessons too. We got everything here.
We got everything. I think I want to do it again. It's just now working out the schedule.
Yep.
Yeah. That's the big thing because as I just said to you, like constantly moving for me is not going to be an option. I just don't like doing it. But then it's also working out without taking too much of a risk. Some good partners, like location-wise, wave-wise, when do we go to those locations? Because obviously the ocean is seasonal, the earth is seasonal. So we got to pick the right times, who's going to come, that sort of stuff. So, yeah, there's a lot to consider. But for sure, 100%, we're going to keep doing ocean retreats. And it'll probably realistically be... one or two a year.
Yep.
Yeah. And then we'll end up doing three or four wave pool retreats a year.
And then like, just to give people an idea, right? Like who are these retreats for, right? Like what, and I'm not talking about your surf level per se. It's just like personal goals, right? Like what sort of people will benefit the most from these ocean retreats?
Yeah, I think the minimum standard, I mean, we kind of have to mention level.
Okay. Rewind.
Okay.
And level.
Yeah, yeah. We've got to mention level because you could do a beginner focus retreat in Imswan or something.
Right.
You know, in Morocco with apparently 55 people in the lineup with you.
More or less.
So, yes, you could do that and have it be a beginner appropriate retreat. So, it depends on where you go. But I think with the ocean stuff, it's really imperative that someone is independent. Able to be independent in the ocean. It doesn't mean they can't benefit from a push every now and then, like a couple of the guys in the Maldives, you know, injured shoulders or you know, stuff like that, fatigue. And I can see, oh, hang on, you're probably going to go over the falls here if you don't get a little push, you know, that sort of stuff. But that's the minimum standard. You have to be independent in the ocean. You have to be able to duck dive, you know, paddle around and that sort of stuff. From that level, you can go all the way up to an advanced surfer. You know, I've coached people all the way up until, you know, probably mid-advance, you know, people who can do really nice turns, but there's just tiny little tweaks to work on.
Yeah.
And those, obviously, you get diminishing returns as you get better, right?
Of course.
So the people who get the biggest impact is that intermediate bandwidth, yeah. right? So people who are doing maneuvers, but they know, like, oh, I'm not sure what happened on that one. Why can't I get that same feeling that I had on the other one?
Yeah.
You know, it's those sort of people who are questioning that, but also able to catch a lot of waves and put it all into practice. And then you've got to talk about a mindset thing. Because I've had people come to me who are closed-minded, and those people are, to an extent, unteachable. You've got to break through their belief systems before you can even deliver a message.
That's very interesting. When you say closed-minded, like, what do you mean? Like, sort of, like, not open for, like, to critique or open to suggestions? Or
no, they come wanting to learn. I can see that they're wanting to learn.
Yeah.
But the first thing they'll do when I'll talk about something is, I have an excuse for that.
Right.
And then I'll go, okay, that's fine. But then we still need to do this. And then I have an excuse for that as well.
Okay.
So those people are really hard to teach because they anchor themselves in that zone and say, well, there's nothing I can do. It's quite defeatist. So often I have to sort of employ a little bit of NLP and, you know, try and be a little bit sneaky with how I deliver the message or ask some questions and stuff like that. And that stuff takes time, which, you know, obviously slows down the progression output, the possibilities of progression. So it's people who are really open-minded with that stuff and ready to learn and excited to learn that benefit most. And I'm very lucky to say that that is most of my student cohort. And I don't say it lightly. Like, I literally have the best audience in the world. Like I said, I posted on my Instagram. Someone wrote a note and left it on my car the other day.
That's
like,
awesome.
Thanks
That's
for your really videos. Cool. Like, obviously saw me go surfing and just left it under the windshield. Like, it was just so cool. And they're all really intelligent, interesting people to chat with. You know, they're all doing special things here and there all around the world. And it's those high achievers. You don't have to be a high achiever, quote unquote high achiever. Success is relative. But it's those sort of people who come to it excited and open and ready to learn. They're the best ones to coach. And they're the ones who progress the most. Yeah.
Okay.
Mm.
That leaves me with, watch this space, because there's going to be more to come in terms of retreats,
for
in
sure.
terms of service roadmap. I think there's an advance.
Yeah, we're working on stuff. Coming. Like, on a personal note, I've just had so little time because I dedicate so much time to surfing.
And French lessons.
You know, I'm here. One of the big things about coming here was learning to speak French, and I'm doing that. So at some point, I prioritize work. I do. I've been, the last 2 days, I've been sitting around working. But yeah, it's a big slog at the moment. I'm going to employ someone full time, a filmer and editor, so that I can actually work on those things that you just mentioned, the creative stuff.
Send your resumes to this guy. This guy needs a filmmaker and an editor.
I do.
Man, that's it.
Yeah, cool. Thanks for
having
me.
I need a coffee.
Yes, okay. Thanks, guys.